meeting of the Board of Directors of the San Diego Metropolitan Transit System. And we'll start with the roll call. Clerk, please call the roll.
Alvarez? Arambula? Bragg?
Here.
Cole? Cunningham? Gomez? Hall?
Here.
Mathis?
Here.
McClellan? McWhorter? Rios?
Here.
Roberts?
Here.
Diaz?
Here.
Donovan? Zaff?
All right, thank you. Want to welcome Ron Hall from Santee and Mike Diaz, who's sitting in for Mayor Salas this morning. And of course, Mike Donovan for Bill Sankey from Coronado. The first item of business, the approval of minutes for May 11th, 2017. And if there are no comments on the minutes, I'll take a motion for approval. From Bragg and a second from Ms. Cole. No further discussion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. We'll go to public comments. I have a few people here, and we'll start in the order in which they were received. And our first speaker is Martha Welch, and she'll be followed by David Roger. And our third speaker will be Chris, and I hope I can see this, Rand. Go ahead, man.
Martha Welch, I'm here to talk about mean traffic systems. That's what it means to me. Why else would you change the orange to American Flag with the blue right now? If you're coming down from Old Town, you have to walk over to the blue line or orange. There's, if you want to bus, it won't go where it wants at some time. If someone wants to go to Old Town in the middle, they have to go down this way or walk of that way. I don't understand why you did this. It doesn't make any sense to me. There's no reason for that. The bench where I live on 10th and F was gone for 3 days now. Three buses go there and it's gone. Now, here is the only place you get the green line. So you have to come back this way or you have to go that way. Now, other things, you don't have bathrooms. Only the drivers have bathrooms. On 8th Street, all the drivers, relief or everything, have come in a van and stay there if they have walked their lunch they want to or bring their lunch. On Broadway, there's a lot of the Rapid changed to where the other ones, and the other ones with Rapid. There's no benches for them also. So benches are a very problem on the bus right now. Now, I found out online you can't make a complaint, but they gave me a card, so it's email. I hope it works because I want to complain with the orange line, what you're doing that, and also a lot of things like the 11. You know, the 2 was much better, but it's just hard to tell what's better on that one. It's kind of strange. But I've always thought the blue line should go to Old Town like it used to and not what you're doing. It's not right what you're doing. It makes it hard for it's not a complete loop anymore with the trolley. And that's the biggest thing I'm a problem with you is that problem that doesn't connect to the green line. And I think if you've ever been in the trolley from green line to the orange line, there's a lot of people go change to those two trolleys, but you're taking it away from those people to do that right now. I know the bus does it, but maybe you don't want to take the bus. And if you trolley, you can't, if you trolley ticket won't go on the bus. So you have to do that thing. And also, a senior wants to buy a trip, a round trip, it can't do it also. You have to one way on a senior on there. And if you buy a thing on the bus, it works for the trolley, but if you buy the trolley, it doesn't work on the bus. So it's not comprehensive what you do with this system. It's not like it's all together. It's like it's all broken up. It's not a cohesive loop like it used to be. It's like it's broken up in pieces now.
Thank you. Our next speaker, David Roger.
My name is Dave Roger. I sit on a couple of the City of San Diego Rec Council groups. And I don't know if this board recognizes that your system is an on-demand system, meaning that if I know where I want to go, okay, I can go into your system and find out where I want to go. But we're a tourist city, and in nowhere in the MTS, you see pictures all the time of our trolleys in our tourism. But when tourists come here and they want to use our asset called the trolleys or the bus system, the MTS system doesn't give like, where can I go today? Can I go, let's see, I'd like to take a trip. we're in California, we're a car-based society. We all want to jump in our cars and do this. Well, we have people visiting San Diego that are not car-based, and they're used to using public transit to go and visit and see things. And their systems actually give you the ability to go and see things. Like, I'm sure none of you have ever thought about, how about taking a weekend on MTS and go out to Borrego Springs, spend one night at Casa de Zorro, then the next day take MTS and go to Julian and spend the night in Julian and then come back to San Diego. Nowhere in any of your marketing or any of your stuff do you talk about this, but our whole system and is driven on tourism. And nowhere do you're feeding this demand, but you're not looking at a huge city that's built on tourism, and you're missing that whole marketing towards going out and places to go and things to do. It looks so, let's put it that MTS has a very negative amongst the community because it's really hard. There's lots of people that don't use it. But these tourists that come here actually use our system because that's what they're used to. And I really think we need to look at some kind of MTS tourism, seeing as we're being used in all the marketing for the city of San Diego, TMD board and all these things. You need to really think outside the box and get out of your cars and think about where you can go and what you can do. Like the kids that are going up the coast, they use it on Friday and Saturday nights. It's called a beer run. They get on the train and they jump off and they go drink, and then they get on the train and they bring a case of beer and they share with everybody. And it's really, there's a lot of these kind of things that I don't see that you guys are actually marketing to. You're actually doing a demand system. And, we're coming up on the summer months. I really think you need to look at something else.
Thank you very much. Chris Riel.
Hi, my name is Christopher Riel. I'm going to be brief. A couple of weeks ago, I went out to Fort Rosecrans Cemetery to visit, for Memorial Day. I decided to be clever and take the trolley. So I went to Old Town, and then I realized that there was no way to get to Fort Rosecrans. I took one of the buses that goes out to Rosecrans Street, and luckily I Ubered up there. I Ubered up to the landing spot where they had the shuttle to take us up to the cemetery. But there are a lot of older veterans, people that weren't able to do that, and I called Rosecrans, I called the National Cemetery, and they said, that they're considering cutting out the 84 that goes up Rosecrans through the cemetery and also Cabrillo. And I just figured that would be wrong because a lot of people that need access to the cemetery, not just the weekday, but also the weekends or special occasions like Memorial Day, Veterans Day, 4th of July maybe. I believe that during those special occasions of the shuttle, it goes from a landing spot near the cemetery up to the cemetery. And I was considering maybe there could be a way that there could be an access from Rosecrans Street or somewhere, maybe Old Town, to take people up there. I don't know if that's part of MTS or part of if Rosecrans contracts with a private entity to take people up there, but that'd be in consideration. So I would request that you reconsider cutting off, eliminating the 84 that goes up to Cabrillo and the cemetery. That's it.
Thank you very much. That's our final speaker under public comment. We'll now turn to the consent agenda. There's items 6 through 18. Are there any items that the members wish to pull for discussion? Seeing none, there's a motion for approval and a second from Mr. McWhirter, motion by Roberts. No further discussion. All in favor, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Before we go into closed session under item 24, we have a speaker, and I'll ask Mr. Mitch B. Beauchamp to come forward.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Mitch Beauchamp, currently City Treasurer of City of National City, formerly manager of the Tijuana-Tecate Railroad. Today you have a closed session on the business of operating the Desert Rail Line. The performance so far of the present contractor has failed to meet any of the practical milestones. However, the prior and present contractual relationship has generated several millions in payments for other activities on the rail line and trolley line, but no freight line is successfully operating on the Desert Line. The San Diego region still is in the grip of the BNSF monopoly. The Baja California government has a dependable history of awarding the operation of their Mexican section of the line to contributors or hunting buddies of the incoming governors, and similarly the administration of the parastatal Admecarga to unqualified political cronies. This is the history of Mexico and results in a lack of stability that is needed to get the Desert Line back into operation. For this reason, the association with the Mexican operator before you today is problematic. The operation of the Mexican portion of the line has not been stellar. Despite the investment of major central government funding, the line continues to dwindle in freight volume. The demonstration of ineptness is seen in the construction of a massive headquarters building that is not needed on a site that is too small, the construction of a cold storage plant at Estación García where there are no customers with frozen commodities, the incorrect placement of the Esperanza Bridge, which requires a train slowing to a crawl to cross, and the insane removal of Tunnel 3 and subsequent landslide of the exposed bedrock, closing transborder access to the eastern end of the desert line. These all attest to the sad condition in Mexico. Just yesterday, a friend indicated that there is land being offered, and I think I had something passed out to you show what's going on down there, along the proposed line extension to Sausal, Ensenada, and Colnet, all pipe dreams like rebar rusting and unfinished buildings. At the western end of the line in San Ysidro, consider the fact that the trains are not crossing with U.S. certified operators. None now speak English. Locomotives have not been kept up to the 92-day maintenance standard, and associates of the organization have been clouded by money laundering charges. I believe there are two major issues you consider. Before you consider your relationship with the present contractor, I strongly suggest that you do due diligence on the corporate finances of that group and their performance, aside from the excellent smoke and mirror propaganda that they are so good at, and see if they have paid the funds due to acquire the contract through the bankruptcy. Also, consider the reality of international line operating under the onerous upfront financial burden that has been placed on the line. The record will show that I warned you about individuals associated with the illegal takeover of the Desert Line, and this matter before you is just a continuation of poor decision-making by the present administration and by you as decision-makers, swallowing it hook, line, and sinker.
Thank you. We'll now go into closed session, and we'll be back. Well, we're back in open session, and our council will report out.
Item number 24, closed session conference with real property negotiators. The board received a report from negotiators and gave instructions.
Okay, thank you. Well, we have no public hearing and no discussion items, so we'll get on to the report items, and our Mr. Jablonski has an opening statement he'd like to make.
Yeah, I just wanted to make an announcement to the board that we received notification from the Government Finance Officers Association that we once again received a Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting, the GFOA certificate. This is now 11 years in a row ever since we finally got our audit taken care of back in 2004 and 2005. So it's a great achievement, and Larry Marinisi and his department should be very proud of that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much, and we're certainly glad to hear that. All right. We'll begin with item number 45. Mike Thompson is here on our operations budget status report for April 2017.
Good morning. I'm presenting the financial results for the first 10 months of the fiscal year. That we're comparing to the amended operating budget that we amended back in March. So this is the first look at that results versus that amended budget, starting with operating revenues, as we typically do. Fair revenue is trailing budget by about $1.2 million over these first 10 months. If you recall, for the mid-year amendment, we dropped this fair revenue target down substantially because of declining ridership all year long. So we are still trailing our amended budget numbers slightly. We are offsetting that slightly with other operating revenues. That's a favorable by about $600,000 or 5%, and that's due to advertising revenues and land management revenues, all those things being a little bit more favorable, interest as well. So in total, operating revenue is about $500,000 unfavorable to budget over the first 10 months of the year. It's a 0.6% unfavorable variance. Looking at operating expenses are favorable to the amended budget at this point through the first 10 months. Personnel costs are slightly unfavorable, $863,000 negative variance, 0.8% unfavorable variance. That's being offset by purchase transportation. We were favorable there by about almost $800,000, just over a percentage point. That is on both the ADA paratransit volumes are being a little bit lower than what we had planned for, and then we're also seeing some savings on the fixed route side as well. Energy is also favorable by about $500,000, 2.2%, as based on the experience on the commodity prices. So in total, we are favorable on expenses by $706,000 over the first 10 months, a 0.3% favorable variance. So when you roll these two up, we are basically right at zero for the first 10 months. We're very slightly favorable, and based on the way things are looking for the last 2 months, we expect to come in very close to zero at the overall end of the year. Looking at our major concerns that we track every month, sales tax subsidy revenue is on target to hit the amended budget figures. We've had some good experience in the last quarter, so we expect to become very close to that target overall. State of California budget, we've been expecting that number to come down all year. That number will be revised in the CIP. When we have the final number, we'll adjust the FY17 CIP accordingly and keep the operating budget whole. Passenger revenues, passenger levels, again, has been a concern all year long. We adjusted the target down. We're still running slightly behind that revised target, but we should come in fairly close to that. And then energy prices are pretty much close to what we expected, and we have no concerns there. Again, overall, 2 months to go in the fiscal year, we feel we'll come very close to the overall budget. And that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions on this one? Seeing none. Thank you, Mike. Moving on now to the Transit Operation Plan, or TOP. Dennis Desmond is going to give us an update, and then I have some public speakers on that one.
Good morning. Today we're going to be discussing the Transit Optimization Plan. This is a plan that we began a little over a year ago. We will be coming back to you in July for a public hearing to discuss some of the service implementation plans that we want to propose to you. Those will be much more specific to route by route type of changes. Today, however, we're not going to be doing that. We're simply giving you an update on the planning, and then we'll give you an update on the schedule as well. To begin with, why now? Why are we doing a transit optimization plan now? The last time we had a significant update to the transit operating system was with our COA, the Comprehensive Operations Analysis. This took place over 10 years ago, and it has served us well through a number of events, including the recession and the deep service reductions that we had to implement at that time, the weekend COA when we had to further cut and we focused our efforts on the weekends, and then the rapid services were implemented in 2014, a real positive for the system, but we actually had to make a significant number of alterations in routes at that time as well. And then finally, there's been a lot of new travel options that have come into the marketplace. TNCs, Uber, Lyft. We've had lower gas prices, so a lot more people are able to afford a car and have been choosing that as their option. There are also some things on the horizon that are going to further impact our system. South Bay Rapid is due to open in 2019. This will be a significant enhancement to the service network in the South Bay and will be welcome change. Also, the LRT is scheduled to open in 2021 up to the UCSD UTC area. Again, that's going to require us to focus feeder routes into that new infrastructure. Another significant thing that has happened is that the failure of Measure A means that we won't have additional local resources to really significantly enhance our service. And but we, on a positive note, the state has authorized new transit funding under SB 1. This is very positive, and we're excited about it. We have not budgeted for that. However, it also has some risk involved because there is an initiative afoot that will potentially repeal the service, the transit funding that might come to us otherwise. So that is a source of some risk. And then finally, the biggest thing which we just discussed under the budget is that after our ridership peak in FY15, we've seen a significant downward trend in our ridership, as well as our fare revenue, productivity, fare box recovery, and it's across the board, across all modes of transit, as well as across all of the routes within our system. We're projecting a $5 million structural deficit, and this board has authorized us to fill that in FY18 with the hope that our transit optimization plan will actually help us address that problem, to somehow reverse the ridership declines that we've been seeing over time and to enhance passenger revenues. Those use of one-time funds for ongoing operating expenses could be a real problem for us, and so that's why we want to backfill that with increasing ridership and increasing passenger revenue. So another thing that you should be aware of is that it's kind of like a transit industry understanding that every 10 to 12 years you should be looking at your system, because demand in the marketplace changes, there's always new things coming in, new land uses, et cetera, and so it's really timely for us to be doing this now. I'll turn it over to Dennis now.
Before Dennis starts, I should add, and I should have mentioned this when we started, was that for the benefit of the newer members, Sharon Cooney wears many hats, and in addition to being our chief of staff, she's also our planning director. With that, go ahead, Dennis.
Great, thank you very much, and thank you, Sharon. I want to start out with just talking about the goals and focus and the strategies for this project. And some of this is going to be familiar to board members that have been here since last year when we started the project. But I thought that a lot of the information is valuable since we haven't had a big update on this to the board since December. The goals and the focus of the project were really to look at the sustainability of our system. This is one of the four pillars of our board policy 42 on service. So Sharon mentioned the $5 million structural deficit. This is one of the things that we want to address. We also want to make sure that the system is shaped to respond to markets and any markets that have changed since we did the COA 10 years ago. We want to improve the reliability of our system and our services that we're providing out to customers. We want to schedule and have service planned correctly, but we also need to make sure that we can deliver it reliably. And we also, as Sharon mentioned, want to position our system to incorporate future projects coming on board. So our strategies, a lot of these strategies are really best practices from the industry that have been successful elsewhere, including here in San Diego when we did the COA. And a really key part of that is to enhance our frequent network. But we'd also like to maintain some mobility options in areas that have less ridership potential. We've done a lot of community outreach as part of this, and I'll get a little bit more into that later. We want to make sure that we're responding to some of those issues that have been identified by our riders and non-riders to create a system that's attractive. And we want to, again, address mobility needs and issues of riders and non-riders. So we started this last fall with a community survey. We were very successful in getting about 4,000 responses, and what was exciting for us was about 1,700 of these were from people that don't ride transit at all. So focusing on the 2,000 that do ride transit, we want to find out why they ride less frequently.
And really what popped up time and again with a lot of these is it's the time and the convenience, the time that it takes to use transit versus the time that it takes to use other alternatives. And when we asked what people were doing instead of riding transit, the vast majority, over 60%, are driving instead. This really meshes with what we're seeing with the cost of driving, gas prices, other metrics that we're seeing out there. When we asked about the challenges that people had using MTS, I've sort of put these seven different things in order. We gave people choices, and the two things that really popped up is that service isn't frequent enough and that it takes too long. So again, frequency and travel time are really the two things that pop up time and again with our riders and non-riders. Just a word on some of the public outreach that we've done. Again, 4,000 surveys from riders and non-riders in the fall. We had about 2,000 responses this spring when we did another round of outreach, and a lot of very good media coverage on the project.
And I did want to let you know that that's ongoing. Even yesterday, we had a couple different outreaches, and we'll continue doing that before we bring it to the public hearing in July.
So we after the outreach and the survey in September, we had a consultant come on board and start with a market analysis and looking at how those markets might have shifted since we did the COA 10 years ago. The map that you see up on the screen now is our current housing and employment density in the region, with the brown dots representing employment density and the yellow dots representing housing density. As we move into 2050, the surprise that we see is that this doesn't change a lot. What we see is additional densification of areas that are already highly residential and highly industrial or workplace oriented. So 10 years ago, we anticipated that this would be much more spread out than it is, but what we see is there's going to be a lot more intensity in the already developed areas. This is a positive thing for transit in the future. We anticipate more than 60% of the population will live within a high frequency transit route versus about 30% now. So I think there's a lot of opportunities going into the future, and we want to make sure that we're planning for that. The map that you see now shows the diversification of different land uses. The green squares on here represent residential density, and the brown squares represent employment density. And one thing that really pops up is that a lot of people are traveling a long ways to get to work. There's very few places in San Diego where people live and work in the same community. A few workplace-intensive areas like downtown, University City, and Kearny Mesa have some density of employment, but the other thing about employment is it is really spread out throughout the county. We looked at communities that have high job-to-population ratios, and these are areas that have a lot more employment than they actually have people living in them. And you can see Kearny Mesa is really stands out here as having currently about 15 times the number of jobs as it has employees. What this means is that people are not living and working in Kearny Mesa, they're traveling to Kearny Mesa. And we see the same thing in communities with low jobs to population ratios. So you can see some of the mid-city communities in Encanto, City Heights, and some of the other areas have very high residential populations and very few jobs. So all of those residents are commuting long distances to get to work. Looking at the inner city commute trends, we have all of our jurisdictions represented here. And you can see, with the exception of San Diego, most of the jurisdictions have fewer than 20% of their residents are also working in the same city. And San Diego is a little bit skewed because it's such a large city that covers such a large area. I think if you were to break that down into individual communities, you'd see a very similar pattern. We wanted to look at the densities of various populations that have traditionally been high transit users. One of those, of course, is seniors. And as you look at the map on the screen now, it's a little bit difficult to see, but the light green shaded area represents 1 to 5 seniors per acre. And that's really how the senior population is spread throughout the region. There's very few locations of any kind of a senior density. And as you look at all of these various demographic groups that have been high transit users, the challenge with this is that it's hard to create services that tailor to these individual populations when they're so spread out throughout the entire region. So as you look at youth density, we see a similar pattern. a little bit of density in the mid-city and East County areas, but really it's very similar to the senior population. When we look at college age students, age 18 to 24, again, fairly spread out with a little bit more concentration near the major universities. Looking at the densities of our minority communities, these are over 50% of our population, and you do see some densification in certain areas, mid-city community, South Bay, Mira Mesa, and El Cajon. And the one thing to point out about this is that as we go through major service changes, we are always looking at the impact of those changes on our minority and low-income communities as required by our Title VI guidance. And when we look at low-income densities, we see a fairly similar pattern with some density in the East County area as well as mid-city and then along the blue line in the South Bay. Looking at households that have no vehicles available to them, this is only about 2% of the population, so the vast majority of households have some vehicle available to them, although not everybody, of course, drives or has access to that vehicle. We see densities in the downtown area and mid-city, and that's almost about it. Just looking at population growth, this shows the growth for various communities over the next 20 years out through 2050. I wanted to point out the border. The border is a unique feature of our region here, and it's actually a very important one given that half of the pedestrians crossing the border are actually crossing to access our services, either boarding buses or trolleys at Otay Mesa or San Ysidro. And what you can see in this graph is that not only have border crossings increased over the past 5 years, but the share of riders getting onto Otay Mesa has increased. This has been a very substantial change for us. We've put a lot of resource into Otay Mesa and will propose continuing to do so to capture that ridership as part of the TOP. So some key findings from the market analysis. Regional growth patterns, again, are expected to be more dense and concentrated, which is a good thing for transit. However, we're still dealing with this low jobs to population ratio, which is also projected to increase and not substantially improve. Youth and senior densities are very highly dispersed throughout our region. And these patterns, again, have not changed substantially since the COA about 10 years ago. So then we did a service evaluation. This was looking at our existing services and how well they meet the market demands and improvements that we might be able to make. Just looking at our historical ridership and productivity trends, the chart on the left shows our system ridership, and you can see we were the first part of this century, I guess, the first 5 years we were in a ridership decline. And then we did the COA in 2005 through 2007, and you can see we made some system improvements that really reinvested services in our core network, and that had some very positive results for us for the next several years. When the recession hit, our ridership went down as a result of cutting substantial services, but since then it started to climb back as we've restored those services and the economy has recovered. Our productivity follows this pattern very similarly. Looking at our ridership by time of day, you can see the bus and trolley are represented here, and then the gray line on the top is the total of the two. And you can see some peaks in the 6 to 7 a.m. hour and again in the 3 to 5 p.m. hour, as you'd expect. What's unusual about this for San Diego is that this graph, while it has those peaks, is actually much flatter than you'd see in a lot of other areas. Areas with much stronger central work places, Chicago, New York, San Francisco, et cetera, would see much, much higher peaks than we see here. Our midday ridership is much stronger, what we call our peak-to-base ratio, the number of people riding in the base of the day versus the number of people riding in the peak of the day. This map shows our weekday ridership, where the concentrations of ridership are. The orange circles represent trolley boardings, and the blue circles represent bus boardings. So you, of course, see some high boarding numbers along the trolley lines themselves. Once you get outside of the trolley, universities and colleges are very high boarding locations, and then the mid-city community, El Cajon Boulevard and University Avenue as well, have some high concentrations of boardings. Just to compare what happens on Saturday, Saturday, of course, the system shrinks on weekends as schools are out of session and fewer people are working, but we still see a similar pattern with the ridership concentration along the trolley lines and along those mid-city corridors, as well as in the South Bay along the 3rd Avenue and Highland Avenue corridors. Then Sunday is again a slight contraction of the Saturday ridership. So the system ridership on Sunday at 115,000 is compared to 310,000 on an average weekday. And these, by the way, are 2015 numbers from our peak. Looking at different routes and how they perform, we wanted to look at the routes that are doing really well, and we want to look at the routes that are struggling and may need to have some changes. These routes that are doing well, this is where we wanted to look at increasing our investment. These are routes that have a lot of demand. They perform very well in terms of fare box recovery and the amount of cost that's recovered through fares. And I won't go through each of these individually, but we can discuss these later if you have questions. Here's the routes that that are struggling. These routes perform below 15 passengers per revenue hour. These are the routes that we look at in one of two ways. The first thing is there a way to restructure these routes to perform better? Or is this a route that the resource would be better spent and reinvested elsewhere where we actually get more riders for that that resource? This graph here just shows the variance in fare box recoveries. This is the amount of the cost of a route that's recovered through the fare box, through the fares that riders pay. You can see that we have a wide variation. The green bars on the left represent the trolley lines, and then we have the different types of bus services. And you can see each type within each type of bus service, there's a wide range, ranging from some of the border routes that are up over 90%. To our rural routes that are down below 8%. Subsidy per passenger, this is the amount of subsidy that is put in for each passenger that boards the vehicle, and this has a very similar range and pattern to the fare box recovery with a range from some buses that are just a few pennies per passenger to the rural routes, which are actually over $30 per rider. So some key findings of the service analysis. We have 8 bus routes that perform very well, over 40 riders per hour. We have 12 routes that are performing below 15 riders per hour. Ridership patterns have remained same, are similar since the COA. However, there have been some specific markets that have really seen substantial expansion, UC San Diego and the Otay Mesa border, as I mentioned. We do have some routes that operate very slowly. These are things that we want to take note of because the slower a route performs, the more resource that we need to put in order to maintain that same level of service. We have some routes that are below our on-time performance standard. That's another thing that we'd like to look at to see if there's a structural issue with the route that we can do to improve the on-time performance. And so our service implementation strategy, which is really the next phase, is to address all of these market and performance issues. So moving into the service implementation plan, our approach was to utilize the Board Policy 42 principles. I mentioned the sustainability as one of those as a primary one. And it's really about reinvesting in our frequent service network. We have a huge amount of data from our outreach, from new technologies that we have, from survey results, and actually SANDAG has some really good data from their onboard survey that they conducted last year. So the development of the concepts that we're right now finalizing to bring to a public hearing is to strengthen that core frequent service network. These are the services that operate every 15 minutes or better. We want to simplify the system, make it easier for people to use, make it more approachable for people that aren't actually using transit now. We want to increase the reliability, and the goal of this project was to have a neutral resource impact.
So I just wanted to mention that while that was the original goal, because we were not authorized by the board to go ahead and try to add service levels, we have since started to look at it as a possibility that we would enhance other services that we really wanted to enhance in light of the fact that SB 1 had passed. So we will be bringing forward certain proposals that if the board chooses to authorize us with that budget, that we would eventually put those services in place. But so far, we've really looked at it as a neutral expense or a zero expense plan.
So you talked a little bit about the coverage versus the frequent network strategies. What I wanted to show as a follow-up to that is our existing frequent network compared to what a draft might look like for the TOP. So what you see on the left side, the blue lines are our current bus routes that operate every 15 minutes or better, and the yellow lines are there's only one route that operates better than every 15 minutes. And when I talk about the frequency, I'm talking about an all-day weekday. So we certainly have routes that during peak hours operate more frequency, but this is really a base level of service all day that people can count on no matter what time they're riding. You actually have this same map as a separate handout, so it might be a little bit easier to see. On the right is a draft of what we're looking at for the TOP. And you can see we're proposing to expand the frequent service network in a number of areas where we think that we can attract more ridership. And this is reinvesting from other areas into this core frequent service network. In addition to expanding the 15-minute frequency, we're looking at expanding the number of routes that operate better than every 15 minutes. So you'll see several new routes that are in yellow here, including our routes 3, 5, 13, 955. In terms of reliability, we're also looking at very long routes. Some of our bus routes are up to 2 hours long from end to end. This makes reliability very challenging. Very few people ride these routes from end to end because in most cases there are much better options. It's just that's how far the bus happens to go on its route. So to give you an example, our Route 11 is 111 minutes from Paradise Valley and Deep Dell Road all the way up to SDSU. And what we see, it's really an example of the challenges that we see because people in a lot of cases are only taking these routes for 2 or 3 miles. So for example, on Route 11, you may have a student that's trying to get to Morse High School along Skyline Drive, but they're impacted by traffic at SDSU. So by looking at these routes and seeing if there's ways to make them rationalized, in a lot of cases we can make the service more reliable. And lastly, we're looking at our vehicle assignments. One of the things that we hear a lot of times is if we have a capacity issue, whether it's too many riders or not enough riders, can we just change the size of the bus, either operate a smaller bus or a larger bus? And that's definitely something we're looking at. We have a lot more tools available to us than we had during the COA. So that's something that we're addressing. We have new articulated buses that we're going to have at our South Bay division, which will be the first ones that we've had under contract. So we'll have those available for our contracted routes. And then we're looking at minibuses deployed on some of our lower ridership routes, which we already do, but I think we have more opportunities with that. So looking at the overall project schedule, I've gone through what we've already done. Right now we're in the process of taking all of that feedback that we've heard from riders over the past couple of months. We started with introducing people to some of the proposals in April, and we're taking all of that feedback now and finalizing what those proposals will be. And our goal is to bring this to you at a public hearing next month. And then get the feedback from you and then have a final decision by the end of the summer for implementation next year. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
We have three public speakers here. I will take questions, though, just for clarification if there's something that you don't understand. But before we get into a discussion, I'd like to go to the public speakers. So, Mr. Alvarez.
I missed the dovetail description on the handout that you gave us, which I appreciate the bigger.
Yes.
I have pretty good eyes, but this is tough to see, so I appreciate that. What is the dovetail description?
That does warrant a better definition of what that is. What we refer to as a dovetail is when we have two or more routes that are scheduled evenly in order to create a frequency. So in other words, it may not be one route that has a 15-minute frequency. It's two routes that each have a 30-minute frequency, but they're scheduled every 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
So we have a few corridors. For example, Plaza Boulevard in National City has the 962 and 963, each of which are running every 30 minutes, but we schedule them so that you have 15-minute service along the corridor.
Okay, so the on your proposed June 2017 map is what I'm looking at. There are two that you are those proposed or are those existing?
The College Avenue is existing and proposed. That has routes 856 and 936 that run from SDSU down to Lemon Grove along College Avenue. And then the other one that you see is a small one over in the Point Loma area on Sports Arena Boulevard, routes 8 and 9.
Okay. And then for the on the proposed, the green colored line on the proposed, that is the old, I think, just because I can't overlay it one on top of the other, the old dovetailed line?
In a couple of cases, yes. For example, Main Street in El Cajon is currently a dovetail of the 815 and 816. So what we're looking at is streamlining the 816 to provide a faster service from El Cajon Transit Center to Cuyamaca College. And with that, we would take the 815 and actually run that itself every 15 minutes. And it would be a slightly shorter route, but it would be all along Main Street through El Cajon.
Okay, so that's the one on the furthest east. There's
exactly.
One south in the current network that is dovetailed that I think becomes green. And again, just because you can't
sure
really see, is that the National City one that you mentioned?
Yes, that's Plaza okay. Boulevard and National City. So routes 962 and 963 follow Plaza Boulevard together as far as Euclid, and then 963 dips down to Plaza Bonita, and 962 continues out to Spring Valley every 30 minutes. So what we'd like to do is propose having 962 run every 15 minutes for its entire length all the way out to Spring Valley.
Is there a way to get these electronically so we could zoom in a little bit better, and then is there a listing of what you just said of what these are in a table or of some sort?
Sure. Yeah, I think that we're still finalizing these and doing some costing analysis and that kind of thing. So we should have these fairly finalized within probably the next week or two.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, Ms. Goldenis, you had a question. Okay. Thank you. Okay, we'll go to the speakers then. If there's no one else, I'm sorry. Yes, let's go ahead, Mr. Donovan.
Thank you. So,
I'm sorry, Mr. Diaz. Or...
Okay, thank you. So, in your market analysis, you drilled down quite a bit on that. But I just want to circle right back to our second speaker, public speaker, who was talking about tourists. Do we have any data on tourists? How are we providing services for those folks, and are how what kind of job are we doing, and is there things that we can do to improve that?
Yeah, I think that there's certain routes that are definitely used by tourists more than others. And what we typically do is we have seasonal fluctuations. So what we see in the summer is a lot of the routes that have a lot of school ridership, for example, 709 and 712 going out to Southwestern College, or 41 and 44 going to Mesa and UCSD. Those see a lot fewer riders in the summer. So what we do is put those resources on some of the routes that see higher ridership in the summer, for example, routes 8 and 9 and 30 going out to the beach areas. So I think that where we see the demand increasing seasonally is very tourist-oriented. We will make those changes.
And is there a chance to promote that?
Yeah, we actually have a brochure that we give out to the hotels and the convis. And I believe Rob's here. He could speak to it. But
I think the other – and I have to apologize for being the alternate. My depth is pretty shallow.
No, that's fine. No, we do a lot of work to promote our services to the tourist industry. Sharon did mention the Fun Places brochure that lists all of the typical sites that people can see in San Diego, and we distribute that to all the hotels. and Balboa Park and all the info centers. We also do a lot of work with the Convention Center, work with the Convis Bureau. So we do ads each year in all the convention magazines that go out to the convention planners, encouraging them to ride transit. So there's an extensive effort to communicate with the tourist industry.
I would also say that, you know, when a lot of people are traveling and visiting a community, they use Google Maps to try to figure out where someplace is, and it's got a transit component that we are fully invested in. So that will give the transit option.
Okay, I want to make sure that we're just asking questions for clarification. So I'll take you now, Mr. Diaz, and then Ms. Gomez. I'm sorry, Mr. Donald, and then Ms. Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. On the slide you had on frequencies, it's number 38. I just noticed that we're not showing the 904 in Coronado. I know we just in Coronado started our free shuttle for our residents that the city subsidizes, and we run that every 15 minutes. So is that not shown just because we're doing it during the summer, or?
Yeah, that's a seasonal one. That's actually on a year by year agreement with the city. Yeah, but if we were to show the summer, at least, you know, the past few summers, you'd see the 15 minutes or better in the Coronado shuttle. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's been very successful, by the way.
Yeah.
I know you all know that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I did want to note, we did put the 904 on the list of the lowest producing, but that was only in the winter months. And the big investment that the city of Coronado has put into the 904 in the summer has really led us to believe we need to keep that going year-round despite the productivity decline.
Yeah, we kind of agree with that. We're going to bring that up later in the year. In Coronado, I mean.
And Ms. Gomez.
Thank you. On slide 14, where you provided data where there's low jobs but high population ratio, I'm quite interested in seeing can we track where some of these communities, so where the population goes to for work, and how is our transit connected to that?
Yeah, that's actually a very timely question, because what we're just getting now is some really good data out of the SANDAG onboard survey, where they actually went and surveyed thousands of riders on buses and trolleys and got their origin address and their destination address. So that's data that hasn't always been available in the past without doing intensive manual survey ourselves. So having that available is something we'll definitely pull from. What we know is our experience riding to use the mid-city area as an example, we do get a lot of demand and request for people accessing jobs, a lot to the north, going towards Kearny Mesa and UTC area, as well as to the west, going towards Old Town. And that's where we're seeing a lot of demand growth, and where we have invested a lot in our Routes 10 and our Route 235. But I think that as we get more and more of this data from the SANDAG onboard survey, we're going to be able to drill down a lot more and get a lot more granularity on that.
Okay, and then just to continue in that path, on page 12, where we have the population and employment, I'm interested to see our routes, how those are connected to the employment centers. Do we have routes that are going to the high dense employment centers, and where are they coming from? Because it just seems like we have these maps, and they're great maps, but
right. There's
no overlay.
Right. Yeah. And we can definitely provide more of an overlay so you can see how that works. Even an overlay is a little bit nuanced, because some of these have demand during certain hours in certain directions. For example, we run a lot of commute service along the I-15 corridor that only operates southbound in the morning and northbound in the evening. What we're trying to do is, when we talk about the frequent service network, is to really improve that and expand it so that people that don't necessarily work a 9-to-5 job can actually get to work, whether they're working in the midday or they're working later in the evening. And that's where you see a route like the 235, which is our I-15 corridor route running from downtown through mid-city and up all the way up to Escondido, is really being a useful route and actually a big success story for that corridor. And I think that's the kind
we're getting into a discussion okay. here, and I really want to get to the speakers, so okay. I'm going to call on them if you don't mind, and then you'll be first up after we do that. Okay, Jacqueline Brown is our first speaker, and she'll come up, and then she'll be followed by Louis Parmigiani. And you have 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and board members. My name is Jacqueline Brown, and I'm here to talk about the proposed closure of number 83 bus. I'm a member of the Meeting Place Clubhouse, which is for people who have a mental disability. And apparently one of my colleagues spoke about, and on behalf of that, for the number 83 riders a couple of weeks ago, or at the last public hearing. I'm speaking as though, and I want you to suspend your imagine for a moment that I'm one of the housekeepers and my name is Maria Torres and I live in Tijuana and I want to tell you about my commute without the number 83 bus. I'm at the border checkpoint for crossing into the United States at 4 a.m. It's about an hour wait, so I'm leaving at 5 a.m. to come into the United States after the wait to wait for the number 80, the Blue Line trolley to America Plaza, its last stop. Now it's 6 a.m. At 6 a.m., I cross the street at the end of my route to go to the Santa Fe Depot entrance and waiting for the bus, the trolley, I'm sorry, the number, the Green Line trolley to Santa Fe, to Santee. I arrive at 7 a.m. in Old Town. I exit the trolley. I walk downstairs, under the tunnel, upstairs, to the eastbound number 10 bus. The number 10 bus takes me to Mission Hills where I work, and I arrive there at about 7:30 at the Goldfinch stop, and then at 7:30 I walk to my employer's place of where my work is there. And I make a brisk walk at 7:30 to get to my job by 8 a.m. This commute without the number 83 bus starts my day at 4 a.m. Turn that around at 5 p.m. when I leave, consider the same route but add a trolley, the Orange Line to get me to 12th and Imperial, to then go to Tijuana on the Blue Line. I think it would be a really hard trip for all of my friends who are housekeepers to work without this bus. Yes, there is the access at $4.50 a day, round trip $9. It's pretty much, it's a considerable amount of money to consider for somebody who doesn't make much more than minimum wage. I would like to thank you all for allowing me to speak today and having this public hearing, and have a good day.
Thank you very much. Mr. Parmigiani, you're next, and you'll be followed by Patricia Paler.
Hello, my name is Louis Parmigiani, and I have to rely on the 83, and if you take it away, I have to walk up a hill like 8 blocks, or I'll have to walk to the Middletown to catch the trolley. You're taking away, and there are a lot of people that ride that bus, you know? So I wish you guys don't take it, and I'm a disabled person. And I wish you guys don't take it away.
He
is a bad man. Yeah, and it's hard for me to walk up these hills, and I have to walk up to catch the 10 at Washington and Goldfinch, you know, so.
That's 20 minutes to Middletown to get the trolley.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. And it takes me 20 minutes to walk to the trolley in Middletown. So that's about it.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Uh-huh.
Ms. Paler? We can get you up to this microphone here.
Oh, no, I'm fine. Need to stand for a while. Thank you for allowing us to speak. I had Julia give each of you a letter that is involving the 83 route. And wanted to just say that unfortunately the discontinuation of the 83 targets many low-income people, seniors and disabled, and domestic workers who work at the houses in Mission Hills. And I ask that you please read my letter. I know that you're all really busy, but it is very important to us. And the bus as it is right now needs to be improved and not canceled. I've been riding that bus for over 10 years, and I do know what I'm talking about. And I don't think that the due diligence has been done on this bus route. So I really would appreciate if it could be reexamined. So, all right, that's all I have to say today.
Thank you for coming down, and we have your letter here.
Thank you.
All right, we'll turn back, and Ms. Gomez, did you have any continuing comments that you wanted to make?
I did. Just to follow up in what you were saying, just so I can understand this correctly, are we, as we're evaluating our system, is it mostly based on frequency? And I think it's frequency is a big thing, obviously. Data shows it. But are we also looking at where people are going? Do we have the system necessary?
Yeah, I hope that that's what comes out of the market study that we did was determining where people are working and where people are living and how to best connect those. And I think what the best practices have shown is that increasing the frequency and reducing the travel time between all of those areas is really an effective way of building ridership. Mm-hmm. So that's really our goal and hopefully what came out of the market study as well as the service analysis together.
Okay. And then lastly, in terms of, I know right now there's a big push on, I don't know if part of the analysis is looking at the last mile and how that gets done, but I know that there's a big push for walking, biking, and one of the things, because I've experienced it in the past, going from downtown to UCSD for some events, I was actually biking. And I know that there's limitations on the buses. If it's a pretty heavy utilized bus that it's mostly used by students and they bring their bikes, there's limitations to that. So I'm wondering, are we at all possibly, I know this is a controversial remark, but can we think about exploring adding more bike racks on the back or something, expanding that? And what are the thoughts around that?
Yeah, that wasn't specifically part of the TOP, but I think this is another area where frequency really helps us. If you've only got a bus every 30 minutes, then you've got basically four bikes an hour that you can carry on any one segment. Whereas if we have a bus every 12 minutes, then we've got 10 bikes that we can carry. So that's where, again, frequency really helps us.
Yeah.
And, you're absolutely right. The first mile, last mile is always going to be a challenge in San Diego just because of our topography.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Ms. Zapp, and then Ms. Rios.
Got it. Yay. Great, thank you. I've been looking forward to this presentation, and I also wanted to thank you for taking the time to talk to my staff yesterday about some of the concerns that we've have on some of these route changes that we've been hearing from different citizens. And obviously, I'm very supportive of using the limited resources we have in the most expeditious way. And reliable, frequent. When you see why people are not riding, we have to respond to that. So, a couple things. First, I'm excited to see that Bus Line 35 is going to be doubling frequency in Ocean Beach, a big transit multifamily community. We've got Gretchen from the town council here. I'm sure you're happy to see that too. Yes, very happy. However, in the Point Loma area, it looks like the plan is to completely eliminate bus route 84, which actually connects Spaywar, the Navy base, Fort Rosecrans, and Cabrillo National Monument. There's a lot out there. And so I'm just asking that instead of looking at elimination, we look at other
options. By the way, the Peninsula Planning Board, the Point Loma Association have weighed in on this, and they believe that discontinuation could leave some of our most needy populations without transit to, you know, the areas that I mentioned. But Cabrillo National Monument actually had 950,000 or so visitors last year. It's our only national monument, and about 60% of those actually visit on the weekends, and that's when currently the bus doesn't go out there. So with this in mind, I would ask that that you continue to evaluate options that don't discontinue it, but rather modify some of the existing service. For example, maybe, you know, doing the morning commute, spay war and all that on the weekends, maybe make it seasonal, doing perhaps only weekend service out to the Cabrillo National Monument. We got a call from somebody. They actually went out to the Shelter Island where they do the transfer, and realized on the weekend they were going out to Cabrillo National Monument and got stuck there because they didn't realize they couldn't get all the way there. So some good citizen somehow saw what was happening, took this woman out there to see the grave of her loved one, and stayed and gave her a ride. So, you know, just ask that you would take a look at that and see if there's maybe a creative solution. I know that, you know, looking at the numbers, it's not a good ridership, but maybe we can somehow make that work. That would be terrific. Thanks.
Ms. Rios, and then President Cole.
Thank you, Chair. I looked at the community survey, and it looks like it was done primarily online. And in a national city, we have some challenges with the technology. It also looks like a lot of the IP addresses came from, you know, further north, not in the South Bay area. So it seems as if the South Bay hadn't been really represented in this area, even though there's quite a big or large ridership. Were there anything set up near in the South Bay area for people to access the survey?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, in a previous presentation back in December, I broke down where we got the surveys from. There was actually pretty even representation across the board. But what we did is we went out to each of the communities, and we spent some time at the trolley stations. And we were at, in fact, 24th Street, H Street, and Iris trolley stations a couple of different times. And for people that weren't able to access it online, we took paper surveys, and then we entered those ourselves into the online survey.
Okay, because I also noticed with the population growth that National City specifically is projected to be growing up to 37%, which is higher than the other cities that were listed, and yet there's a productivity report showing less than 15 in a good portion of National City. So that concerns me with that population growth. So I too would like to get more information prior to you coming back to us in July, where I can really zero in on these areas and be able to address some of my constituents who are transit riders and find out some of the concerns there before we make these decisions.
Sure.
Thank you.
If I could, real quick, I forgot to, I neglected to mention that our office has heard from both Point Loma, Nazarene, and Spay War, also expressing concerns on those, on that route.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you. This is, to me, really timely, especially for me. I was in a meeting yesterday evening with some business people saying we need jobs and employers in District 4. And so this information is really timely, and I'm looking forward, because a couple of things. We do have the second busiest, I believe, transit station on Market and Euclid. And so people are going out of my district for jobs, and this will help me, I'm thinking, with employers saying that we need to definitely have more employment opportunities right in District 4, and that's what we were talking about last evening. But we want to make sure that in the meantime, we do have service that is frequent. We want to have, we don't want it to take as long as it does. So I'm looking forward to your findings and what you're going to be doing to make sure that we have more frequent services and it doesn't take that long. So I'm looking forward. That's going to be, you said, in the summer of 2017 will have what we're going to do about this.
Right, right. Yeah, our goal is to have a public hearing at the July board meeting, where we'll have some of the information or more of the background information on a route-by-route basis, so you can see specifically what we're proposing in each area. And then you'll have an opportunity to comment on that and request changes at that point.
Thank you so much. Again, this is very timely. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, so Ms. Bragg.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Desmond, for the report. I did have a question on when the arrival of the articulated buses in the South Bay would be and what routes those are going to be on. And then my concern about, of course, bus route number 18, there are pain management centers on in that area that bus services. So, and I know that there's a number of disabled people who ride that bus to attend those, and there are also employment centers. And I had a brief discussion with Ms. Cooney, wondering if we could maybe alternate the hours of bus 18, in that maybe it would only run during peak hours because of those considerations. So again, just an opportunity maybe to rearrange and reshuffle some of the scheduling there.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our articulated buses, we anticipate getting the first batch in the fall. And we'll probably be deploying those first on Route 709 and Routes 950, where we have very, very heavy loads coming from the Otay border and then also going out to Southwestern College. And then it'll also give us a tool when we do see overloads. We have another option for handling that capacity out of the South Bay Division rather than just adding another trip. So it'll be very valuable for us. And Route 18 is our Camino del Rio North and Camino del Rio South route in Mission Valley. So thank you for those comments.
Anyone else on this? Yes, Mr. Alvarez.
Just for purpose of understanding the process, the July, you said?
July.
Public hearing? That'll be like the public hearing, and then the vote will happen not at the same time. It'll be the next meeting, I assume? Is that the?
Right.
Okay. Just.
Yeah, and depending on how much feedback we get and how many alternatives we're going to process, we'll choose them.
Okay, yeah. I guess just for clarification, I was asking, just making sure we're not having a public hearing and voting that day and trying to make changes on the spot would be quite complex for you. So, okay. And then the other, so my question from earlier, which was if we could see the maps in a better format that we could sort of zoom in and zoom out. And then the actual lines themselves and the frequency changes and all that. And then this, going forward, if SB1 is sustained longer term, I assuming we're making decisions based on the not taking into account SB1 dollars, is that correct?
Well, originally, we wanted it to be cost neutral.
Right.
But in the processing of the whole thing, and this happened under the COA in 2005, we found a lot of really good stuff that if we had the funding, we really wanted to put it in, but right. We never could because we didn't have the money.
Right.
So in the event that we had money, the plan is so that we can structure it so that we can add services as money becomes available.
Okay. So it's not just – there will be – the way I sort of in my head envision it, there will be sort of a list of recommendations, and at some point you have to cut it off because that's the amount of money we have. But there will be others that maybe were requests and maybe would have been good additions, but they're not going to occur because of funding does not exist. Is a cutoff going to be at the cost neutral point, or where is that going
to
be?
And I believe that was a budgeting discussion that we're going to bring to the Budget Development Committee and then bring forward to the board.
Well, maybe I can add a little context. Originally, this was thought that we would proceed on a cost-neutral basis. We would, take off the low-productivity stuff and reallocate those resources. That probably is still kind of more true given the fact that we've got a $5 million hole in our budget and don't have the money to invest beyond that. But this process is an excellent process for identifying where our best options are for increasing service. So we're preparing that. And I think there's a lot of expectation with SB1, with the transit, that we put that to good use. And but only for this next budget year, while we're expecting 17 or 18 million, if that holds up, we'll only get 5 or 6 million probably in February or March of next year. That's the first time we'll see anything. So what we want to do is, once we get this plan all done and we understand what the cost neutral breakpoint is and what other services are, we're going to work, we're going to start with the Budget Development Committee and end up at the board with deciding whether we should take some of that SB money, SB1 money that we're getting in FY18 and invest that in new services to try to build ridership. So that'll be a decision that'll ultimately come to you.
So if the decision gets made by the board on that budgetary item that we should add services, would we add services based on the top or the transit optimization plan, or is it potentially entirely new services?
Well, I guess the answer to your question is both.
Okay.
We're using the top process to generate the list of services that we would recommend to you to add. One of the things that we have not talked about too much is additional trolley service.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't want to get too far ahead, but the way we're looking at it right now is that there's probably a list of bus services that adds up to, you know, 3 million or so, something like that. And then additional trolley service that we've been thinking about is a couple more million. So, you know, we're looking at the 6 million. We've kind of targeted 6 million because that's all we have. That's all we're getting for SB1 in the first year. There is some risk, certainly, that if SB1 gets repealed next November, that the services that we add, you know, may be somewhat in jeopardy. But if we put that service out there and we make those changes and we start to get that ridership increase, maybe we can close that gap.
Right.
And maybe we won't have to cut as much. So that's the way we're trying to play this.
Yeah, so I appreciate that, because that's like really important, because it's what are the parameters we're operating under. If it's increasing ridership to increase the revenue at a cost neutral point, then we could do this no matter what happens with SB1.
Right.
If it's adding services dependent on the SB1, that's different. If we're not even considering adding services because we're not considering SB1, then maybe we should start looking at trolley increases if there's demand for that. So I'm just trying to sort of make sure I have the right parameters for when the decision comes as to what we increase and what we don't.
I know it's all, this is a little bit premature, and we would develop that, but I think we do want to create opportunities to show the public that the SB1 money is being put to good use and it's doing something.
Right.
You know what I mean? And if we can have some positive gains in ridership with additional service and things like that, I can think of no better way.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Ms. Gomez?
I forgot to ask, this is in regards to SB1, and if it seems like these dollars could do quite a bit if we are to get it, and there's reference to repealing, and this is just going back to AB 805. I would like us to, and I don't know what the thought is in terms of us engaging in protecting SB1 dollars, just in regards to the lobby in Sacramento. Are we doing anything, or should we docket something to direct our council to do that?
This is like the number one issue with the California Transit Association that we're, I mean, we're integrally involved in that association. So we have all of our, not only our own lobbyists, but our state association lobbyists that are fully supportive of SB1 and continuing it.
Okay, just wanted to, no, thank you.
Okay. This is an information item, and so we'll continue on then to item number 47. And Sharon?
Yeah, we just wanted to keep it in everybody's mind that we're working towards implementation of Compass Cash, the stored value component of our fare collection system. We've been working on this steadily at all levels of the agency. We believe that we are going to launch at the end of this month. I will tell you, though, as with any old piece of software, we are experiencing challenges at every turn. So I can't guarantee that to you at this point, but we kind of, that's our target, end of this month. We'd like to get it in before July 4th, and we'd like to get it in before Comic-Con. So that's where we're headed.
Yeah, we'll be doing a lot more field testing and the final testing next week, which I think concludes on Friday. So that's probably the drop-dead date on us announcing that it'll launch sometime in the end of June.
Okay, well, any comment? I do have a speaker on this one, if he's here. Colin Parent.
Thank you. My name is Colin Parent. I'm policy counsel with Circulate San Diego. We've been asking MTS to implement stored value for about a year and a half now, so we're just here to express our appreciation that we're moving forward on that and that we're getting some progress. I think that there's a name, Compass Cash, is a good sign, and we're encouraged by that. We will also be being very public and loud and encouraging. Once the program goes live, we're going to do a bunch of social media to promote it and to thank the agency. And you should anticipate seeing some positive things from us about that once it goes live. So we appreciate the continued efforts on that. We'll look forward to seeing it being implemented. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your support. I have under item 60, I have no report to make. CEO, under 61.
No, I have nothing to report.
Okay, on 62, any board member communications? Seeing none, I do have a couple of public speakers under item 63, and we'll take them now. First speaker is Gordon Rayner. Mr. Rayner? You have 3 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a frequent rider on number 10, and it's often jammed in the late afternoon. People going from Old Town toward Mid-City. If you were to put another car, another bus on number 10 in the mid to late afternoon, that might help the situation. And further on number 10, you're going to eliminate the stop at the Richmond Department of Motor Vehicles. Otherwise, getting to the DMV is going to be a very long walk. And you have an existing shelter against the rain and the sun there at the McDonald's at Richmond. So why scrap that? It's an existing nice place, although there are homeless who tend to congregate there. They can be evicted. And the other thing in general is these advertising we see on the sides of the, especially the new trolleys, that obscures the view, the beautiful views that tourists are going to want going up Mission Valley. And if you were to put ads on number 28, number 8, number 9, number 30, number 904, this is definitely not going to help tourism, ridership. So how did those ads get on? Have they been field trialed before starting to paint over the windows? I prefer to ride the old cars now because I can see the ducks and the birds and the trees, even though I have to go up the steps, and it's difficult with a bicycle, which I don't ride anymore, but could someone expand on why the ads were put there? Obviously, it's money, but the adverse effect on tourism, wouldn't that counterbalance the income from whoever puts the ads on there, the Chicago School of Podiatry or whatever it is in the there's another one. What is it? Some fly-by-night school. I don't know. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, and our final speaker, Janice Goldman. Are you here?
LOMTS. I had an accident about 5 years ago, and I'm not a lawyer, but I had no choice to become one. And I thought I would try speaking to the board, because I'm really not a lawyer, and, you know, I can't say it's been profitable being one. And I also knew I was an extreme disadvantage trying to negotiate with a criminal attorney that you have against me. Therefore, I decided to try to speak with the people who actually can decide to settle with me if they choose, and speak with them just as a real person about what happened, because that's really what I am. And by the way, a real person who's been the only one, from what I can tell, who has actually, from the very beginning, told the truth about this accident. And to Karen, who would understand this, under penalty of perjury, I swear this is true. Okay, I learned just a few things being a lawyer, very few. But it was a costly, it's been costly. Anyway, I did keep the case open, not that I wanted to, just so I could speak with you guys, okay? So I'm rather hoping you'll really listen to me. I tried to talk with you, Mr. Jablonski, several times, but you kind of refused. So I did get to, I'll come up to that a little bit later. What happened in 2012 was simply a malfunction of the trolley door and sheer negligence on the part of the driver. You had pictures of this accident, whether or not you released them to me. I requested them several times, but since I'm not a lawyer, I'm sure I did not do it the proper way. I finally did it kind of properly here, and I did it in writing, and also I put it on Karen's voicemail from up here in MTS. And Karen did respond, and she is the head of your legal team, saying that I waited too long. Originally, when I asked, I was told there were no cameras. I have since learned that there are cameras on all of the trolleys. I learned that from the very few lawyers that helped me, and there were very few. But mostly women lawyers would pitch in once in a while because they felt sorry for me. God bless them. But actually, it was a man that brought me into his office that showed me all of the ins and outs and told me he would never go against MTS because they were so down and dirty. And I have to kind of agree with them, you know, from what I've learned. And so that's why I'm talking to you as a real person, because I truly have not lied about this. And I'm afraid that there were a number of accidents where these people maybe didn't live through it, that you kind of blame this person. And, you know, I heard a lot of talks about suicide and such like that. If I would have died in this accident, you would have said it was my fault too. And that kind of bothers me. So, you know, I tend to stand for myself, and certainly, but I stand for other people that are a little bit weaker. I always have. If it means I have to become a lawyer, I become a lawyer, or whatever I have to do.
Thank you.
So, thank at you, any Ms. rate, I would never have gone through all this trouble if I wasn't absolutely sure that this was MTS's fault. Absolutely sure.
Ms. Goldman, and I was your time is up.
So I'm just letting you know that. So I'm going to write what I'm going to read what I wrote in the original.
Ms. Goldman, you can leave that. Are you listening, Ms. Goldman? Your time is up. You can leave something in writing if you wish. You're correct.
Can I have a couple more minutes?
No, I'm sorry. If you have it in writing, Ms. Goldman, you can leave it.
I came here to ask for a certain amount of money because I'm a little tired of being a lawyer and it's taking stress on me.
You're here under public comment and we can't take action on you. You can make your, you've made your point. You have the time that everybody else has granted. So I'm going to have to cut you short. I'm sorry. But you can leave it in writing, all right? Can you hear me, Ms. Goldman? Ms. Goldman, don't talk to individual members. You're talking to the group here.
I believe you could add a couple of minutes to somebody that spent 5 years.
I'm sorry, but we're going to have to cut you off. Leave something in writing, all right?
Why do you think I'm here to talk? Why do you think I'm here to talk? Sir, whoever you are, okay, I've wasted 5 years and certainly 3 years and a lot of stress.
Ms.
I think
Goldman,
you could waste a couple more minutes.
Ms. Goldman, I'm sorry, but your time is up, all right? Now, if you want to leave something
okay,
in writing,
sir.
You're perfectly capable of doing that.
Not okay. So I'm just going to throw this out. I'm asking for $300,000. I originally asked for $100,000. Very well deserved. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Goldman. Well, our next meeting is July 20th, 2017, and we are adjourned.